Insecurity by Harvey Taylor. When I'm around musicians, I call myself a guitarist. When I'm around guitarists, I call myself a drummer. When I'm around drummers, I call myself a singer. When I'm around singers, I call myself a songwriter. When I'm around songwriters, I call myself a poet. When I'm around poets, I keep my mouth shut. That was Insecurity by Harvey Taylor. Voice is an evanescent quality, an ephemeral thing. We know ourselves by reflection in many cases. We see ourselves in the mirror or in photographs and realize that blue or pink is truly our color, or sometimes not. Others compliment us on our fine features, our eyes or hairdo. But even more intimate than these other physical features is a person's presence in his or her voice. Welcome to Voices, or Listen to Me, on Mind's Eye Radio. Today, we present to you a cadre of voices in poetry and prose that will show some of the powers and mysteries of speech. One of the most familiar forms of vocal performance is the barbershop quartet. In this segment, Paul Thompson explores the origins and format of this art.
What care I who makes the laws of a nation? Let those who will take care of its rights and wrongs. What care I who cares for the world's affairs? As long as I can see its popular songs. Let me sing a funny song with crazy words that roll along. And if my song can start you laughing, I'm happy, happy, happy.
The piece we're hearing is Let Me Sing and Be Happy by The Naturals, an award-winning barbershop quartet. Like jazz and the blues, barbershop, four voices joining together in harmony without any instrumental support, seems to have sprung up in the African-American community. White minstrel singers and vaudevillian performers adopted the style, as did many white amateur groups. It grew into barbershop as we know it today. But due to discrimination by barbershop societies, few blacks took part. Barbershop today is trying to overcome its image as a white preserve, but with only limited success. Harmony refers to music sung or played in chords. Take any adjacent five white keys on the piano, say C, D, E, F, and G. Play them all at once, and it sounds terrible. Pick out the first, third, and fifth note, C, E, G, and you have a chord that, when the notes are played together, form a harmony. That's three-part harmony. Double one of the notes, let's say the C, either higher up or lower down, and you have four-part harmony. Male barbershop harmony is carried by four voices, each with its own feel. The voices descend from a high tenor to a bass. The high tenor floats over the other voices, while another tenor, the lead, takes the melody. Still deeper voices, baritone and bass, provide a firm harmonic foundation. Female barbershop singers use the same tenor to bass terminology to describe their positions in their quartet. Let's sit back and enjoy two award-winning groups, The Love Notes, singing Hooked on the Classics, and Standing Room Only, singing When You Wish Upon a Star. This is Paul Thompson, one of the voices of Mind's Eye Radio.
Now we have a medley set to go. See how many melodies you know. We are hooked on the classics. Melodies that will live through the ages. We are hooked on the classics. All the joy that they bring is contagious. This symphony by Mozart exemplifies the Beaux Arts.
Just a thing to show.
We want to show you just why the classics are so great. We'll demonstrate on Gershwin. His rhapsody is done in
textures in passing, changing complexion, forming a classy choral convection, harmonies masked in oral perfection.
Elegant song, where swipes galore,
baritone swipes about a profusion, forging a classic barbershop fusion.
Now for a strange reason, this next part, although impressive, is so hard to keep together, cause the rhythms are strange.
You said it.
The accents never seem to coincide with downbeats, so we look to our baritone, but she's clueless as well. This one is big. It's by Ludwig.
It goes like this,
and then 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 like this.
Now let's get with
Beethoven's fifth,
and then it's on to nine. Let us sing the ode to joy. We'll raise those mighty chords on high. In Beethoven's ode to joy, the chords go ringing to the sky. Here's a hot little tune that is really swell. It's a great overture from William Tell, but we find in our minds it has come to dwell as the Lone Ranger. It's a classical piece that was on the beam, but we now have to say how sad it seems that its fame only came as a TV theme. It's the Lone Ranger. So let's go and visit Romeo. He loved his Capulet. Her name was Juliet. You bet. Here's a classic tune that comes to us from the days of old. A soaring melody with trumpeting of brass so bold.
We're singing
Alleluia, 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 Alleluia. And soon comes the coda, we'll get there with no snag. We love the coda, a fancy word for tag. This phrase is nice, so we'll sing it twice. Some chords are so mysterious, they're Greek to us.
Now it's carmen, and it's cause for alarming, cause the leads find it hard to sing the words.
Sing the words.
We are announcing that our tongues in pronouncing are bouncing around, it's absurd.
Slurp.
We never planned it, so you can't understand it. What a scandal, we can't be slowing down.
Oh, here's a suggestion to repeat the conjunction in depression. Let's move to Tchaikovsky.
We're singing hark, we hear the cannon roar. We're singing hark, we hear the cannon roar. Here comes the moment we have all been waiting for. When we'll be singing hark, we hear the cannon roar. We're singing hark, we hear the cannon roar. We're singing hark, we hear the cannon roar.
That it scared them. Oh Lord, we heard a roar. That was a roar. We're at the end. That's the end.
We still haven't heard the cannon roar.
That is the end. There is no more. Fun to try, fun to try, fun to try. End of our medley of classical songs. So, ta-da!
star is born, it may have a gift or two. One of them is this: it has the power to make a wish come true. When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dream, no request is too extreme. When you wish upon a star, as dreamers do. Fate is kind, she brings to those who love the sweet fulfillment of their secret love. Like a bolt out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. When you wish upon a star, your dreams come true. It is kind, she brings to those who love fulfillment of their secret longing. Like a bolt out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through. Wish upon a star, your dreams come true. Dreams come true. When you wish upon a star,
call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse and nothing particular to interest me on the shore, I thought I would sail about and see the watery part of the world. It is a way I have of driving off the spleen and regulating the circulation. Whenever I find myself growing grim around the mouth, whenever it is a damp, drizzly November in my soul, whenever I find myself pausing before coffin warehouses and bringing up the rear of every funeral I meet, and especially whenever my hypos get such an upper hand that it requires a strong moral principle to prevent me from stepping into the street and methodically knocking people's hats off, then I account it high time to get to sea as soon as I can. This is my substitute for pistol and ball.
Oh, I love that opening passage of Herman Melville's classic. We have books in all kinds of forms now. To many of us, it's a miracle that we still have books at all. And being busy creatures, we mankind, we may be attempting to multitask, So tempted to listen to books on tape or whatever they're called these days, we may feel guilty about it. But we plunk on the headphones and drive that long commute or paint that wall. However, unless one is lucky, one rarely gets the book as it is intended, in the author's voice. It's startling to hear our favorite words uttered by a voice we never would have picked, and so we lose the essential voice if we have it delivered to our ears this way. But what if the actual voice is unavailable? Guy Thorvaldsen still insists that he can hear his favorite.
When I was younger, in my 20s, freshly enthralled after having once again read Moby Dick, I became convinced that we only needed to read one great book in our lives, and that we would do just as well to return to that same book again and again. And I have, but only once every couple years. Yet still I ask myself what exactly Melville does in those pages, that time and again, upon closing the back cover, leaves me as if washed up on a distant shore, spent, satisfied, sitting quietly in the new world, stroking the book as if a loved one, not wanting to leave it lest I lose the what? What is it we don't want to leave behind? Yes, the characters are wonderfully drawn, the journey epic, the landscape sublime, but it's something else, another more ephemeral quality that we are loath to leave behind in these great novels. Those stories that we would choose if ever put behind bars for life, but with one book to choose. It is an overarching quality that carries all aspects of the novel, and perhaps the most difficult to achieve, voice. Not necessarily the voice of a single character, but that ineffable presence of a minor god, the master storyteller who takes over the gestalt of the character's world, and our world for that matter, speaking for everyone and everything. Voice is that very particular sound and atmosphere created by the master puppeteers that tugs and deftly manipulates the strings of plot, setting, and character so well that we think they are real. A memorable voice requires a subtle and skillful manipulation of language such that an abiding marriage of craft and story occurs, not just in a single scene, all writers have their good days, but replicated over the course of 300 or so pages. And what are sentences if not bars of music? Music that novelists both hear and then recreate. It is that certain sound and rhythm and pitch that they then install in our brain until we imagine our eyes, our ears, and the storyteller is us, translating the words we read into our own internal opus. A voice done well buffets us with the unseen forces at play, and is the flagpole that waves the mighty standard of theme. Voice allows characters to live fully on the page, not just as individuals, but as authentic products of their place in the world. If nothing else, voice reflects insight and wisdom of both author and character, often the kind that arrives on the tail end of a funeral procession, or great suffering, or great reprieve. My writer friend says that good voice lets you in, has a pleasurable rhythm, but also an urgency to speak something burning that needs to get out, but only in its own time. And as such, it is not the ending of the tale we hold on to, but that ongoing linguistic immersion in the gradual unveiling of truth that we are deigned to leave behind. The exquisitely suspended sense of time and place along the way, not unlike the exotic drone beneath the Indian raga. Perhaps voice is the sense of patience and wonder we would all like in our own lives, that every word, every sentence, every page matters, are holograms of a complete and flawed life. Simply put, voice is a particular story told very, very well. And, like great songs, has a deep resonance for many readers. And when we find it, it can keep us up all night. Perhaps, in the end, why we like a story told well is that it is a glimpse of how we would like the musical score of our own life to sound. A sound that is ours, one that reverberates out into the universe long after we're gone. A voice that might be read and heard in the hearts and minds and ears by the people we leave behind. Comforting us that our own life has lent itself to this level, this quality of storytelling, of revelation, of meaning, of passion, of dignity, of honesty. So back then, a young reader freshly released from the heaving swells and poetic sky as conjured by Melville, I was enthralled with having been gifted a new and profound sound for a time. And within that sound, I, an emotionally chaotic teenager, felt whole and good and hopeful. What more can we ask of life than to discover a voice we can only dream about rendering? That's as hard to grasp as the very air we breathe. Voice is the wind ridden upon by the storyteller, and the ocean upon which we readers are content to have drifted on for hours and days and lifetimes. And like sailors returning again and again to sea, we readers periodically require these voice-rich novels to set our souls right, to remember something good and pure and eternal.
Posted like silent sentinels all around the town, stand thousands upon thousands of mortal men fixed in ocean reveries. Some leaning against the spiles, some seating upon the pierheads, some looking over the bulwarks of ships from China, some high aloft in the rigging as if striving to get a still better seaward peep. Inlanders all, they come from the lanes and the alleys, streets and avenues, north, east, south, and west, yet here they all unite. This is Guy Thorvaldsen from Mind's Eye Radio.
Now our producer asks Guy about his literary voice.
Well, at first it's all for me. and you know, it's me trying to find the sound, the voice, the language of this experience. And then I turn it around and say, okay, now I'm going to bring this outside of myself. What do I need to do to this poem, to this essay, that bridges that gap between me and the rest of the listeners? Mm. Yeah. You know, I know it's there when it feels like my end of the conversation. And so, but that it's a conversation that I'm having with someone else. So I've finished my end of the conversation, and my expectation is that it has opened a lot of doors for somebody else to speak. Well, I'm getting closer. You know, I always call it my spiritual practice because I know that I will never reach perfection. and yet the more I know myself, the simpler it seems in its manifestation. And so I think that's a good sign. I think when it gets simpler, more pure, as opposed to word heavy and image heavy and, deep and meaningful. I think simplicity is almost that's the achievement I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In poetry, I love Mary Oliver. I think she is one of those poets that is able to have a conversation with many other people, and they don't have to be poets. So she's my favorite. Charles Simic is a wonderful poet. He has a great voice, and a really quirky view of the world that's very dreamlike. I like Simic. Michael Odonche is, to me, one of the most poetic, lyrical fiction writers out there. He is, has truly married language and novels to, the poetic sensibility. And so has Cormac McCarthy. All the Pretty Horses, his trilogy, I think, is some of the most beautiful, ecstatic writing that I've read. And of course, Melville, whose voice is in my head, and because I'm from the ocean and he's from the ocean.
Madison poet Bridget Birdsall.
Got milk and eggs, plenty of sugar, but have you got voice? That's the question. When you read a piece of work, any work, ask yourself, does this have voice, substance, resonance, authenticity? Do I believe it? Is it worth my time and effort? How does it taste? Does it feed my mind? Is it candy to my heart? Or does it taste like skin or air, like love or war, like sinew, or a rubber chicken leg? Does it hunker down in a foxhole of words? Does it yell obscenities at the sun? At night, does it sink to its knees under the stars? For that matter, can it see in the dark? Or is it constantly poking sticks in strange holes to see what lives there? Is it afraid of its own shadow? Does it ever look back? Or does it live in a perpetual pause, forever unable to decide what it wants to be? Does it know the difference between up and down, square and round? Does it give a f***? Or does it like to f***? Or will it ban any word that offends its sense of taste and value? Does it censor itself or run wild and free, galloping across the page like an unbroken horse? Does it give a damn what anyone thinks? Will it wear white to funerals and dance on its mother's grave? Or eat cake for breakfast and bite holes in the bottoms of the chocolates to see what's inside, then put them back in the box? Does it live in a hellhole or the suburbs or Harlem? Does it speak with a lisp or walk with a limp? Does it know what it's trying to say, or does it just endlessly spill all over the page, leaving its readers dizzy and dazed? Does it even care what its readers think, or does it live subversively in molded journals packed tight in basement boxes that smell faintly of cat litter and bounce dryer sheets? And if it doesn't give a damn, so much the better for it. For its own obstinacy might just fuel it to such a state of unrestrained freedom that the one who cooks up this concoction of words, however tasteless, inedible, unpalatable, unending, might just get lucky, might just stumble upon a voice amid a dark void of words that they recognize as their own. And in the end, any writer knows why we write, because we must. We write to hear ourselves speak. Because more often than not, we are the only ones really listening, and we cannot be too discerning, at least for the first 10 years or so. We cannot afford to be selective about the company we keep. We must simply write and write and write. So trudge on, voice seekers, take heart, put it all down, every last silly little crumb and crumble, add the extra apples, the butter. Who cares if it's fattening? That's where the flavor lies. Add the extra egg, too. Substitute nothing. Put it all in, the nuts and raisins and, hell, even bacon if you want. Then bake it or boil it or broil it. It doesn't matter. Just make it as hot as you can stand it. Make it sizzle. Make it yours. This is Bridget Birdsall for Mind's Eye Radio.
Without being a spoiler, listen carefully at the end of Greg's surrealistic exploration of voice. The reader understands. Trust that, yes, the reader will understand. It's one of those tips for writers that followed him across the world, all the way to a tiny hospital in the mountains where they brought him after the fever and ear infection became an unbearable shrieking in his head. He was treated with precious antibiotics, then acupuncture. The treatments were unsuccessful. An herbalist was called in, then a shaman of some kind. Nothing worked. The pain got worse. Then a small woman appeared. She smiled and sat in the chair at the foot of his bed, her sandaled feet dangling several inches off the floor. Somehow she had a copy of his book. She opened it and began to read. Her absorption was complete. In and out of his fever, he watched the shifting emotions move across her tiny face. Her register of vocal expression, initially a constricted sing-song to his ears, slowly grew to take in worlds. He saw his writing stoke something in her eyes and voice that was unruly and restless and incorrigibly alive. He could almost smell sex and something like heat lightning. He finally slept, long and hard. When he woke, the woman smiled and closed his book. The pain was gone. Later, he learned she did not know a word of English. That was The Reader Understands by Greg Willard. You've been listening to Yoo-hoo, or Hey, Is Anyone Listening? On Mind's Eye Radio. Poet Donna Carnes.
There are so many different voices we hear in a lifetime. There are the everyday voices of family, friends, and acquaintances, voices that move through time as we grow older, all of which sound and echo within the surround of our physical, natural world. I wrote the following poem, Fall Down, thinking about the voices of the seasons in nature and in a life. Voices moving through time. Fall down. I am the bones of the tree. My yellow-green buds burst into the lush leaves of new spring, saffron sun on a young day, sparkling on the cusp of a milk moon night, full of thunder and light, and I fall down on you. And I am soft, slow summer, basking in the light of the longest day, sighing in the heat of midnight, full of the strawberry moon, rising over the deepening blues of lingering dappled dusk and driftless darkening hills, and I fall down on you. And I am old fay autumn, where the honey daffodils of lost spring are long gone, buried deep beneath the beautiful bones of lyric open-hand maples and baritone bur oaks, turning their leaves in a moody sky, and I fall down on you. And I am lone winter in silent snow, I am true north drifting south, inside the season of swirling sky. I dream of great blizzards and sorrow night, blanketing the bones of sleeping trees, and I fall down on you. This is Donna Carnes from Mind's Eye Radio.
Poet Judith Zuckerman.
I've come to the end of the road. I've come to the end of the road. Boxes of old papers, memories at the curb, waiting for the garbage trucks early in the morning. I've come to the end of the road, I say in the midnight quiet of the funeral home, sitting with the body, reading psalms and Yiddish poems to a man who once served as the Hillel director, taught university students about a Yiddish world in translation. I've come to the end of the road in the stillness of 1 a.m. I confront my own mortality in the beauty of Hebrew poetry, the poignancy of Yiddish songs. The memorial candle burns in the tall red glass on a small table in front of the place where his body lies in this bare institutional room. I look at Rabbi Swarzynski officiating at one funeral after another. I listen as he chooses each kind word of the friend who welcomed him from Nazi Germany. Underneath, I hear him wrestle with his own approaching death. Voices. Now my flight home is changed for tomorrow, I tell my son. The subways are not running. The buses began only yesterday evening. In the stillness of 6 a.m., an occasional car goes by. One light beams from a fourth-floor window across Driggs Avenue in this North Williamsburg apartment just feet from the Bedford L train. Hurricane Sandy, a gift of no horns nor sirens on this usually busy Brooklyn corner, where every other weekday morning the subways would run, the streets would bustle with morning noise, the stamp of many feet. No internet access, instead quiet rains. The scheduled full moon is hidden behind buildings. An open restaurant fills with voices. The quiet creeps in where horns and sirens regularly dominate, soothing souls stressed with New York City pressures. Hurricane Sandy gives not only a warning, but a screaming wake-up call. Standing at the kitchen window at 7 a.m., listening to the 62 bus make swishing sounds as the door opens at the corner bus stop. Inside crowded apartments that were not damaged, loved ones hug. Their eyes sparkle. Their smiles widen. Laughter rings in apartments that the lucky ones call home. This is Judith Zuckerman for Mind's Eye Radio.
In January 2006, Elise Rawl sent her mother, Fran, and sister Denise the following email. It's the herring winter, moist, chill, hazy weather, even when the sun is out. Usually comes in late. January, February, lasts about 3 weeks or so. That's so when the herring comes in. Down in Sausalito, the bay would be dotted with fishing boats, some all the way from Alaska, and the pungent fishermen would come into Fred's diner in their yellow slickers, bleary-eyed from pulling nets all night long, covered with fish scales. The vivid images from this email set in motion mother and daughters to write these poems.
Herring Song. How the herrings sing in the voices of my mother and my sister. They are a silver ribbon in the great net. When all the herring have disappeared, they will no longer carve highways of moonlight through the sea, down the roads of rivers, to penetrate the edges of the continent with quickened roe. When the rivers are gone and every egg eaten by skeletons with twig-like fingers, then they will rise up to follow the full moon across the sky. As if a flock of songbirds, they will shed translucent scales like snowy stars. This is Elise Rawl Benjamin on The Voices of Fish.
I took a spin on the title and called it Herring Haze. The weather, moist, chill, and hazy, even when the sun is out. Fishermen know. It's the time when the herring come in. The Sausalito Bay, dotted with fishing boats, some all the way from Alaska. The waterfront diner fills quickly with bright yellow slickers. The fishermen, bleary-eyed from pulling nets all through the night. Their huge forearms glow with the glitter of tiny scales, like fishy fairy dust.
This is mine. Herring weather. Moist, chill, hazy, even when the sun is out. This is when the herring come in down in Sausalito. The bay is dotted with fishing boats, some all the way from Alaska. The pungent fishermen come into Fred's diner in their yellow slickers, bleary-eyed from pulling nets all night long. They are covered with fish scales. This is Fran Rawl for Mind's Eye Radio, not covered with fish scales.
Iru.
The good doctor introduces a topic that is never far from our minds these days, because it's never far from our ears. The oppressive chattering and vocalizing into ubiquitous cell phones. Everyone can recall their first encounter with what we at first reasonably mistake for a schizophrenic person as a well-dressed businessman whisks down the street talking to himself with a little Spock-ear-shaped Bluetooth in his ear. But never fear, the good doctor doesn't leave us in that hell. His is a wide-ranging discourse on many more pleasant aspects of voice.
Hello, Dr. Stringlove here. In his child's Christmas in Wales, Dylan Thomas mentions the voices I sometimes hear just before I fall asleep. I've never heard them, or any other voices in my head telling me to do this, that, or the other, thank goodness. The voices I hear emanate from other people, our dear radio station, or other electronic sources. The latter voices also originate from one or more people. Voice is mainly a human attribute. Although we speak of woodland voices, for example, the audio output of other animals is usually characterized as cries, grunts, bellows, chirps, etc. There is the voice of the people, the well-known vox populi, to which we can, of course, voice concerns and objections. Those who do not want to be overheard speak in sotto voce, literally, under the voice. Voice can be characterized by pitch, volume, and timbre, and can convey information and emotion without words. It can be soothing, intimate, joyful, sorrowing, threatening, or just plain irritating, as used on cell phones in public. We can distinguish between a person's singing and speaking voices. Singing is delightful when the singer is in good voice, even though it may not convey information if the song is in an unknown language or is a vocalization without words. Some people sing very well. I cannot for some reason, even though I enjoy listening to music. The purpose of speaking, on the other hand, is to convey information. Not everyone is successful at that either, even though their words are perfectly understandable. It is amazing to me how little effort is used for the lips and throat and tongue to modulate exhaled breath to produce a vernacular. This is done without really having to think, as noted before. It is as automatic as walking. Talking came a long time before writing, and we are programmed to do it. Listening is another matter, often notable by its absence. Of course, speech in a language unfamiliar to the hearer is perceived as just rhythmic sound. One of my shop projects in high school was to build a shortwave radio receiver. I was fascinated to hear information pour out of it without me being able to understand a single word. However, it was clear from strident, dogmatic voices that the content was propaganda. On the other hand, melodious voices indicated that a story of some kind was being read. And of course, dry monotone voices, an essay or lecture. Everyone seems to like certain voices more or less. I particularly like to hear women sing in contralto or alto voices, and men speak with deep, rich baritones. De gustibus disputandum non est. There's no arguing about taste. What do you like? This is Dr. Stringlove, voicing my thoughts about voices on Mind's Eye Radio.
Norma Gay Pruitt has always wondered about what the turtle sounds like in The Voice of the Turtle.
And the voice of the turtle shall be heard throughout the land is a phrase from the Bible that I heard frequently as a little Baptist girl swinging my feet from the pew and being very literal in my imagination. My sisters were always lugging home turtles, terrapins, toads, snakes, and all manner of things that crept upon the earth. I myself had a snapping turtle named Sanford that I kept in an aquarium on top of the television. But of all the pets we had, the turtle seemed the least vocal. He had impressive jaws, and if even a little bit of that jagged home on his back was devoted to lungs, might have roared. But I can't recall his emitting anything louder than a hiss. And the voice of the turtle is a lovely phrase, so I was befuddled until years later when someone pointed out that the turtle of the phrase was actually biblical shorthand for turtle dove. Aha! Now I can make it make sense. I had heard mourning doves and regular doves and was now satisfied with the line. Cooing and hissing are not much the same, as I rediscovered recently while taking a cabaret singing class. I have been singing in one way or another ever since my mama forced me and my sister Donna to chirp, "Open up your heart and let the sunshine in," or "Zacchaeus was a wee little man," or "I'm gonna let it shine," in front of the aforementioned church. She dressed us alike, never to be disabused of the notion that while we were 2 years apart, complected completely differently, of differing weights, we were somehow conjoined twins. And we sang, trembling and maybe sounding like turtles or little lambs. Later on, I dated a long run of guitar players and once in a while was permitted to be on stage with one of them. But cabaret scared me. I knew something was not quite borscht belt kosher when there were no tryouts or vocal range tests for the class. It was as if anyone who had ever seen a torch singer could immediately be allowed to belt out Liza Minnelli ditties. We had, it turned out, 6 high sopranos, a couple of altos, and a tenor. We had a lackadaisical piano player who would have been good in a brothel, but who would nod seriously if one told him which key one sang a song in and then play it in another key of choice. The 8-week class culminated in a reel, or so it was billed, cabaret. I had selected Stormy Weather, since Billie Holiday and several odd others, I discovered, had immortalized it as the torch song, because the day we had to pick our solos, it was raining and windy outside. Did it fit my now mature vocal range? Who knew? That was not part of the class. Also, the adorable teacher seemed to care more about the outlandish outfits I wore than whether I could reach down to my garters and dredge up a D on weather. So distraction became one of my ploys. I happened to live around the corner in Chicago from one of the best costume/drag queen outfitter stores in the city. My choice was easy. A vintage sparkling silver lamé floor-length gown, a purple vinyl wig. Had my fake cigarette and my lengthy silver-studded holder been real, I would have put the torch in torch song. Absurd shoes and arm-length purple gloves, false everything, and a corset that gave me the voice of a tortured turtle. I also wondered if my classmates blessed their hearts, as my mom said when she was being catty, if they understood what cabaret meant. They were choosing perfectly beautiful songs, but not of the genre. Things like Indigo Girls and songs by Adele. Oh well, not my problem. So I got my posse of older ladies up, told them to dress in glittery goods, and prepared endlessly for a few days. I was in such a frenzy that I got my classmates' songs stuck in my ears and hummed them throughout the day. Never mind that I barely had my own solo down or that the teacher had chosen some songs that great operatic divas would struggle with as our group songs. One, called True to You in My Own Fashion, was not difficult to sing, but had to do with a girl of such easy virtue that if her paramour of the day offered her a meal, she was his for the taking. I started calling it the whore song. Another was called But Beautiful, but I called it Beautiful But, giving it a whole different meaning. Then, the night of the event, our leader changed locations. I hobbled up to the second floor hovel after departing my cab with a coughing driver who scared me. I was only half an hour early, but it was locked. Not a good sign. I wobbled back down to waste time in a Dunkin' Donuts next to the dollar store. Upstairs, not only was the venue filthy, but never intended to be a nightclub of any kind. It did have a piano and the dour piano man, but no chairs for audience members, no bar, no corkscrew when the makeshift beer and wine appeared. Then, when my sister divas appeared, except for one who was wearing some netting around her head, they were dressed in rather nice church clothes. I stuck out like a turtle in a pumpkin patch. Ah, well, we made it through. And by the time the whore song came around as the closing number, we had managed to find the corkscrew and were beyond worry. But that night, the voice of the turtle was heard throughout the land. This is Norma Gay Pruitt, who still doesn't know why there's no sun up in the sky, for Mind's Eye Radio. Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather, since my man and I ain't together. Been raining all the time. Life is bare, pain and misery everywhere, stormy weather. Just can't get my poor self together. It's raining all the time. Been raining all the time.
You've been listening to Yoo-hoo, or Hey, Is Anyone Listening? On Mind's Eye Radio. We hope you heard us loud and clear today, whether through your radio machine, your computer machine, or a string stretched between two cans. Maybe voices like planetary water and air molecules are never really lost. Maybe the waft of the sound of the butterfly's wings disturbing the universe. Maybe we live as long as there is someone who remembers our voices. Maybe recording devices have loused up that whole philosophy. Oh dear, hope not. But no matter what, we're glad you tuned in today as the mind's ires whispered or shouted or crooned into your ear. Today's voice talents were Bridget Birdsell, Donna Carnes, the Rawl family, Fran, Denise, Elise, and Lewis, Paul Thompson, Norma Gay Pruitt, Guy Thorvaldsen, Greg Willard, Judith Zuckerman. Original music by Barbara Chusett. To hear more of our voices on a whole host of topics, go to radioforall.net. That's radio 4, that's the number 4, .net. I'm Greg Willard. Till next time, the best to you from Mind's Eye Radio.